Yes,
so tell us about your first deal then, or first, tell us about your first deal. Number one, what got you interested in real estate?
In real estate, yep. So, and because I found this deal in the Midwest that's like 60 something thousand. It's a triplex. The owners are going through a divorce. They just want to sell and settle.
They're basically
giving it away. It's a triplex. On paper, it says it's already rented. I'm obsessed with the numbers. I calculated it. I was like, let me just present it nicely and just send it to her. And I did. She probably like, why did I give this lady my email? But I sent it to her. She was like, this looks good. However, the underwriters are the one that makes the decision. So I can't really promise you. I told her I did all the stuff you said I'm gonna do, that you want me to do. I'm gonna build the credit. I'm sure working on that. I already got that. And I put the utilities. And I don't have student loans. I don't have any loans. I don't have a car. I take transportation to go to CDC. Actually, my team actually sent out a blast email to everyone and said, we're looking for a carpool for somebody in Alpharetta.
Oh.
Do you guys, you can't drive, you're 29 years old. And I'm like, yeah. But I've never been in the car seat to drive. Like, whose car am I ever gonna drive where I came from? But then, so it was like, okay, go ahead. I will send this to the underwriting team and we'll get back to you. I'll let you know what they say. And she came back and said, well, they looked at it. They want to give you a chance. And that's how I got that first property. And all hell loose break, or whatever that you guys say. It was bad. Everything was so bad. But yeah, we'll get to that in the next few minutes.
All right, you guys, thanks for tuning in. I'm here with a good friend that's going to be speaking at our event on December 6th and 7th, Yamu.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for being here.
Sure.
So I've heard a lot of stuff about you, good stuff.
Okay.
From Tim that's sitting over there. So he told me you had an amazing story, by the way. So we'll kind of creep into it small, but can you tell us where you're from originally?
Yes. So my name is Yamu. Actually, it's Yamundao, but anyway, nobody can say in America.
Yamundao.
It's Yamundao. So it's a West African name. I grew up in a small country in Africa. It's called the Gambia. It's by the coast. So if you know the Atlantic slave trade, that's where the slaves were put before their ship, because it's right at the Atlantic Ocean. Small country, it's by Senegal.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. And then how many years were you there?
Well, I was born there.
You're born
there, I've never left my country, except when I was coming to the U.S., so... Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's where I'm from.
And then, so tell us the story. What brought you to the States?
Oh, that's a long story. I hope you guys don't mind.
I want to hear.
But so I grew up, first of all, let me tell you, in Africa, in our village, we have multiple tribes. So a lot of people ask me, do you speak African? No, I don't. It's a lot of tribes in every African country, right?
Yeah.
So my tribe, they're most known for, very cultural, very deep-rooted culture. So we live in extended families. So for example, like if you have two brothers or three brothers and five cousins, and you have multiple wives as well. So it's like one family can have like 10 males, and they all have houses in one compound. All of you raise kids there. So it's like big compound. The more you have kids, the more powerful you are basically.
Oh, that's neat. Okay.
Yeah, you see what I mean? So for me, I grew up, my mom died when I was 2 and my dad died when I was 11. And for a female child, getting married is like sometimes when you're just born, you're already probably assigned to a man. So it's like betrothed, they call it. So it's like, oh, you're going to be marrying this cousin. You're going to be married. So the decision is already made for you, like who you're going to be married to.
Wow.
So for me, already made. I already knew I was going to marry one of my cousins and stuff. So when my sister was getting married at a young age, she, because my dad was sick, after my mom passed, he never ever recovered. So my sister had to take me and my brother, who's 45 years older than me, with her. Because my dad was old and sick at the house. And, of course, from one village to another. So I have to live with my sister's husband's extended family. So it's more like, so if you think about different kind of abuse, from sexual molestation, physical abuse, all of that. Because we were the kids that didn't belong to the family. So everyone else in the family had the same last name, the same everything. They're all related.
Yes.
So for those of you who know, kids that are being molested or, go through, they get anxiety and they pee in bed. So I was one of those kids, right? So I wasn't allowed to sleep on the bed. So I sleep on dirt floor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So there's poor and there's poor. So imagine like bleach. So I would sleep on the floor. box, mosquitoes. Sometimes when it rains, because it's not like carpet floor or like vinyl floor, it's like dirt floor. Yeah.
Wow.
So what I will do is I'll go to the shopkeeper at the corner and I'll babysit sometimes for him. And he will give me boxes. So cartons that you use, boxes that you use to pack things when you're moving.
Oh, yes. Yeah. You use that for a bed?
So I'll use them, cut them, and I'll sleep on them. So if I pee in the morning, I don't want people to see because I'm embarrassed. I'll just take those and throw them, and I'll just repeat. So if I go to the shopkeeper sometimes, and the shopkeeper has people in there, he know. He will just put them on the side, and I'll just take them.
A very kind man.
Kindly. Yeah. So a lot of people ask me, why real estate? Like, how? As a child, like 8-year-old, 9-year-old, sleeping on the floor in the middle of the night, sometimes the bugs are unbearable. Like bed bugs are always on me, so I'll kill them back of my neck. Sometimes in the middle of the night, it's very, it's very like unbearable. I would take, you know, touch lights?
Yeah, touch
the
lights.
Used ones, I would take batteries from the trash and just put them. So if you charge them under the sun, you're able to get a few minutes of them. So I would take them.
I didn't
know that. Yeah, I knew that. So I would,
wow.
I would, you know, turn it on, kill the box and go back to sleep. So around that time as a kid, that continued for years. Not that they don't have beds, they do have them, but it's for the guests that come and stuff like that. I remember one time there was a guest that came and I was shaking because I was sick. And all she could hear was my teeth going k-k-k-k-k-k. And then she called everyone else. I was like, what's going on? There's a child here who's about to die. They rushed me to the hospital, the village rushed me to the hospital. The doctor was like, if you guys waited till morning, she wouldn't have made it. I had malaria plus. That's how bad it was. Because everyone else have a mosquito net.
But not
when you
go,
yeah, of course, I'm sleeping on the floor. Yeah, sometimes like warms right next to. So as a child, you know, always like when you don't have something, your goal is when I grow up, I want to have this, right? Like if you want toys or Barbie dolls. For me, it was like a bed, a mattress, a toilet. That's what. So I always say, I'm going to grow. I'm going to work hard. I'm going to get a mattress. I'm going to get
no
a bed.
Bugs.
No bugs and stuff. So that was my goal, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I never thought like real estate. I don't know what that meant to buy property. I just knew that I want to work hard in school. And I know they say if you do good in school, you get a good job, probably something. You can be a secretary and stuff like that. Because a girl child by age 14, 15, it's time for you to get married.
Wow.
Yeah.
Different culture than here.
Different cultures. So for me, one thing that God's blessed me, that's why I don't play about God. You see how I came and prayed first before I started?
Yes.
Yeah. So my prayer was to at least get a job when I grow, or they at least let me, you know. So I was good at school, but then my uncles, the men make the decisions. The guys in the house make the decisions. You call them uncles, even if you're not their uncles, but they're
this
older than you. They're just like elder. Yeah.
Okay.
So they make the decisions. It's like, oh, why she doesn't have to go to school? Like, let her go wash the dishes. Like, you know, like after all, at grade 6, she's going to get married. So I kept going scholarship-wise. So my auntie, one of my aunts always like vouched for me, would say, well, we're not paying for the school. Like, we're not, it's free, let her go. Like, he can marry someone else. Like, he's going to have multiple wives anyways, right? She can be second or she can be third, whatever.
Yeah.
So like God always put that vision in her. Like for some reason, even though she never went to school, she had that hope. I don't know what it was. It was probably God saving me. But that's how I went through from primary school to junior school. Junior school, he's ready to get married like right now because the bride price is paid. So I'm like, oh, I don't know how to do this. So I was like, he came and we were like, can we take a walk? They were like, you have to be escorted. I was like, okay, fine. So the escort was right behind us. And I asked him, how about I just finish high school? You could go marry someone else. And then I can be the second whatever wife. And he was like, okay, I'll give you 1 year. And then high school came. I made it to the top of the school, like the list to make it to college because the university was just new. So I was like, I really want to go to college because all the friends I know from the city that I go to school with, you know, are going to college. They're excited about it. And I took first. Like, they're right behind me. I'm the best in the class. So I was like, I really have to go. So my auntie kind of begged them and everything that, hey, this guy's already married. At that time, I think it was a second wife, I probably would say, or already had married and had just kids. But yeah, that's how it all went. Made it, or fast forward, made it to college. Final year of college, of course, I studied computer science and mathematics. So our university was a new university. But because we're colonized by the British, we have the relationships, universities that like college professors will come and spend like 6 months and teach a course, 1 year.
Oh,
so it's like
that.
An exchange kind of like a service, basically. Mm-hmm. You know how Peace Corps, like that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So they would come teach computer science and maths and stuff like that. So I would pick up those programs. I like, computer science works for me. So I did computer science and mathematics. But yeah, great professors come to the university and teach. So my final semester, I feel like you asked me one question. I'm going.
No, okay. This is what we're here for. Yeah, keep going.
Okay, yeah. So final semester, I got an internship. So for you to get a job in the city, you have to have connection. That's how corrupt the government is. So you have to have that connection there. It's not the same as here. If you work hard, you get the paper, you get the job now.
There, you got to have some type
of sometimes somebody has to. Somebody up there that you know, put in there, even for scholarships outside.
Sad.
It's sad. Yeah, yeah, it's sad, sad. So that's how one of my friends, the guys, I think he was born here, but his parents are from Africa. He went back, started a software company. So he does software engineering company for, you know, payroll, student records, management, HR for companies and the government as well. So he was recruiting some people, and some of the people are two of my friends that we go to school together. So he, of course, they hired as interns, and the boss asked them, "You guys are really good at this. Do you know somebody else?" It's like, there's a girl in my class that she's really good, but we don't know if she's going to be able to come here, you know. Because I have transportation. Sometimes I go to college, they kick me out from class because I can't afford the class.
Oh, my God.
So even though I have a scholarship, sometimes the scholarship is partial. So my sister would help with transportation. Yes, I had a scholarship, but how do I get to school?
How do you get there?
Sometimes I can go to class, but I'm like, how do I get home? So my friends will help me, or if their parents pick them up, they will drop me. So that's how I go sometimes. Food is not a problem. For me, let me get to school, have my classes, and I'll go. And sometimes the professors would help me because, you know, you guys, Western world, you guys are like, no, she deserves to be in this class. And Africa's like, no, she didn't pay. She needs out. So sometimes they throw me out. The professor's like, come in. And I'll just go and sit down because, you know, they love me because, like, I'm doing great in the class and they see potential. But fast forward, I went and interviewed for the guy and he was like, you're hired right now. So I started interning for him, and he would give me money. So I used that for transportation. Going, I was just happy to be there because after I graduated, hired me full time as a software engineer a semester later. But during my time as and that's where I met my husband, one of the math classes. And he would, like, most of the time I'm in the class, I'm like, they're not girls here. This is so lonely. I'm just competing with boys here. So I was like, maybe I should start a nonprofit organization.
Yeah.
So this nonprofit is called Girls in ICT.
Girls in ICT.
Like girls in IT, information technology. Yeah.
Okay.
So this nonprofit, I asked my boss if we could use computers in the place to go teach high school girls or just school to schools and just teach girls basic IT. Most of them have never seen a computer before. So like teaching them to touch it, to experience it. And then we started develop like a curriculum, like how to program in Python, how to create calculators. It's like, hey, you can actually program a calculator. So if you put this number and this number, it spit out this. So like basic things. So it kind of blew up, and everybody was sending me this link, and they were like, because I was on the TV, my aunt is proud. You know, she's taking all the credit for it. It's like, yeah, you see.
That's my girl.
Yeah, that's my girl. And my sister, too, is like, they take all the credit. Oh, yeah, she was in the news yesterday.
Yeah, I helped her go to school.
Oh, my gosh. So fast forward, people keep sending me this link. They're like, apply for this. This is for, you know, youths that are doing change. I was like, this program is for youths that are, you know, finding female genital mutilation, which happened to me as well. So I don't know if those Americans know this, but they cut some part of the girl child to avoid teenage pregnancy. So
Ooh, okay.
I don't know if I can say that in the podcast, but you guys can Google it. It's called FGM.
FGM.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's terrible. So I'm like, this is programs for people fighting domestic violence and stuff. I don't think I'm going to qualify for it. They said, just apply. And I was like, yeah, it's free. Let me just apply. Mind you, we don't have electricity at home or internet. So I only access it at work. So I was like, okay, I'll go and apply. I apply. It's the U.S. Embassy. President Obama has started this program for young African leaders that are doing change in their communities in Africa as a continent. And he named it after Mandela.
Okay, yeah.
Madiba of South Africa, may he so rest in peace. So it's called Mandela Washington Fellowship. So they take these youths from Africa that are doing amazing. They get to study in the U.S. university and then meet President Obama before they leave.
Oh, wow.
40,000 applicants. I was like, I don't think this is, they're going to take me. But I was like, you know what? It's free. Let me apply. So I apply. Mm-hmm. They called me for an interview at the U.S. Embassy. I went out. I was like, this is exciting. Oh, this is the U.S. Embassy. Oh, security and all of that. I was so excited. I was just happy to be there.
Just be there.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't think I'm going to go. I mean, why would they take me? In my mind, like, I never thought of it. But it was a nice experience. I went first interview, got an email that I made it to the second, the third, the fourth, all the way to the end. I was like, okay.
I might go the distance.
And then they picked me in. They picked me in to come.
That's
out of 40,000 applicants, I came to Northwestern University. That's where they placed me.
Yeah.
And then after I was flown to D.C. to meet President Obama, he gave me a certificate.
How was that experience?
So at the embassy, they train me how I'm supposed to act in front of the president when he come out. You see, when he walked in, all that training went away. Like, yeah. I was like, this is President Obama. It's crazy. And this is right before he left. Uh-huh. Like, I met him August 5th or August 3rd.
Okay.
Around his birthday time.
Oh, wow.
And then election happened and Trump came in.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, so this was 2016.
That's amazing. Yeah. Out of 40,000 applicants.
Yeah.
What were the interview processes like when you went each time prior to that? Like, how did they go?
I don't even remember. I was just happy to be interviewed at the U.S. Embassy. And by then, I was actually looking because the abuse at home continued until I was older. Like, oh, I remember one time I went to work and I have all the marks on my body because somebody beat me. I was at home. I was 26.
Oh, my God.
That was normal for me. That was my normal life. So when I came to the U.S., I was like, damn, they beat me at 26. I was the breadwinner. And I still got beaten. But, yeah, I remember walking into the office. My boss was like, who are you fighting? I was like, I wasn't fighting. Mm. I felt. I was like, no. It's either you're fighting. And I went to the restroom. I remember I cried the whole time. And sometimes, like, my friends, I will ask them, because they're from the city. I'm from the village. I don't know anything else. And I was like, so we were having a conversation in the break room, and someone said about salary or something. And I was like, oh, you keep your salary? I was like, of course I keep my salary. I was like, you don't give it to your family? He was like, why would I give my salary to my family? I just kept quiet. I was like, something's missing here. Because when I work, I just give it away. That's all I know. It's like, oh, we made so you got this. So for me, it was just... Yeah, it was that bad. But that's how I came to the U.S. And before that, I needed to get out. I was like, I have to find a way. If I get this scholarship, I need to be out. Like, I don't want to come back to this. Like, I'm finding a way out.
Yeah, yeah.
And I look at different universities in the U.S. that, because in the U.K., the schools that I apply for, I'll get partial scholarship. But they're like, oh, you only have to pay. We're going to pay £20,000 and you only have to pay £2,000. Now, for somebody else, they were excited. Where in hell am I going to get £2,000 from when I'm only paid like in my currency? That's like, I've never seen that amount of money. So I was like, that's not going to work out. Let me look. So somebody told me, try US. And I was like, okay, fine. I don't know anybody US, even Europe. But if I can leave this situation, I would. So that's what I did. So I started looking for all universities in Illinois. Mm-hmm. And I found this university and they were this... gave me full scholarship. I applied for all the scholarships on the list, and most of the scholarship I don't qualify. Some are for U.S. citizens, or some are for international students that are already in the university. I noticed when I applied, I was like, they're not even responding to me. And then later on, I got an email from the school. They said, we don't do this, but we're going out of our way
to help.
We will interview you. We'll do an interview, but it's competitive. It's only for international students that are here. But we want to give you a chance because we like your resume. I pray to God. I was like, hopefully this interview goes, you know.
Really well.
And they sent me the Skype link. And I was like, oh, this is midnight here. I can't do this at home. I got to figure out a way. There's no internet at home. So I told my boss, can I sleep here tonight? I'll work till midnight and I'll sleep here. He was like, well, all you have to do is ask the watchman. It's the person that, like a security
guard.
Yeah. Let them know that you're going to be here. I said, well, so I went in the conference room, set up everything. That's the first time. And this is not racism or anything. I've seen five white men, white people. I was like, I was terrified because I've never seen. All I see is black people, like people like me. And I was terrified at the beginning. I was like,
this is a white dude.
He's like, all white people. And I'm like, I froze. And they were like, it's okay. Calm down. Do you need to drink? So I did the interview. They were like, don't call us, don't email us. It's tough. There's a lot of application we have to go through. Blah, blah, blah. That next day I came to work, I opened the email. They said, we want you so bad. We couldn't wait.
Amazing.
Yeah. full scholarship, University of Illinois. All I had to do is work for them as a data analyst, and they waived my tuition fee and give me a $1,000 stipend.
That's amazing.
So when I came for the fellowship, my aunt did not tell them about the second one because they wouldn't have let me come.
Oh,
so I come for the scholarship and then go back, but they think I come back and I'm staying. So most people didn't even get to meet me when I came back. So I left all my stuff at Northwestern, went home, only took the gifts after the fellowship, came back the next day.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I did not even take a break. I met President Obama on Thursday. We left on Friday. It takes about 10 to 15 hours or something to get to Africa. When I got there, I had to come back on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And Saturday to Sunday, my flight, I got here Monday. Got back here. I was so tired.
So I was about to say, were you tired?
Yeah, I was exhausted. I was so sick. Yeah, because I've never been in a plane before. And then plane two times, three times, that was too much for me. Yeah.
Well, that's
I was
amazing.
So sick, yeah. But that's how I got here.
So you got selected out of 1 out of 40,000, and then you got this special scholarship.
Yeah, yeah. Two visas at the same time. The U.S. Embassy was like, oh, well, you have to come right now. Mm. Once I got the scholarship, I emailed them, right, because I have their contact, the person training me and stuff. He was like, yeah, you can't wait to go and come back to apply for visa. You have to come. Can you come tomorrow? I was like, that's never happened. You have to apply. It's a long list.
Yeah.
Because I already have the relationship with them. They were like, just come. And I came and they gave me two visas. So I have the presidential guest visa and the student visa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. You know, honestly, this is one thing is because clearly we haven't talked about where you're at today.
Yeah.
You're very successful. You have a big real estate portfolio. You have a good family.
Thank you.
You got a little bit of everything. Wealthy on the family.
Thanks
side
to God.
It,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But a lot of people, and this is for the United States, they don't understand how cultures are outside. They don't travel as much.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you started literally on the ground sleep. Like you started at ground level.
Yeah.
And it's amazing because we want to hear more about your story now. Yeah. Too. Like, where are you at now? And then we'll kind of go back to when you got started in real estate.
Yeah.
What is your portfolio and what are you working in now?
Okay, so you remember that 8-year-old girl who wants a toilet and a mattress? Well, now I have 156 toilets or so. Just kidding. But I'm at 156 units now. Mm-hmm. Small multifamily, medium-sized multifamily storage facility. Yeah. So that's my portfolio. I do short-term, mid-term rentals, and I also do Section 8. And now I have, purchased my first self-storage facility.
Self-storage.
Yeah.
Okay. So one thing also too, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I think some of the most successful people had very challenging childhoods.
Yeah.
Right? There's Steve Harvey. He's, I think, down the road, not far, but he always said, man, I have no money. I'm living, kind of poor. Mm-hmm. I don't have no land. I just want to have some land. That's all he felt like.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what similar to what you were saying.
Yeah. I land was big for me. I just want a mattress or like a toilet or something.
Just to live. So tell us about your first deal then. Tell us about your first deal. Number one, what got you interested in real estate?
Yep. So this is crazy. So remember how I got the scholarship to, study as a work as a data analyst for the university, and they waived my tuition fee and they give me $1,000 stipend.
Yes.
So with that, with $1,000, I have to pay international students insurance because I have to have medical insurance, right?
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that takes about $400 from the $1,000. And then I have other student fees like lab fees and all of that. Then I have transportation, then I rental from that $1,000. So sometimes I would just, it's all gone. Sometimes I just go to the auditoriums. Most of the time I go to the auditorium, people have events and they have crackers and lemonade. I just help the person organize. And I said, well, what are you going to do with this lemonades and stuff? They're like, oh, we're going to throw it. I was like, can I get them? I was like, yeah, sure. Thank you for helping me. And I just take those and put them in my bag. And that's what I'll be eating. Mm-hmm. Get noodles. Sometimes I boil rice and I'll just eat rice because this isn't enough. It's either eating or go to school. And I have to go to school to work to make it. I have to have all A grades to keep my scholarship. Mm-hmm. So, of course, school has to be my. So as long as I can get to school, that's my goal. So real estate. How did it get in? So while I was looking, because I'm probably left with sometimes $200, $300 for transportation. I take the bus to go to school. I have to find a better roommate, like that's cheaper. Mm-hmm. So I went to the university students' Facebook page where you see student posts, hey, I need a roommate for whatever. Yeah. We are renting a place, each roommate should bring $200. So I was like, instead of paying $400, whatever I was paying, I could go, get lesser. So I went in there and I realized the parents of the students will buy a a single family home next to the university, have their kid live in one bedroom and rent out the others.
Help pay for it.
Yeah. I was like, I went numbers first. I was like, started calculating that. And then some went further to actually rent per room, but by mattress. So each of the rooms, so if it's a two bedroom, the other two rooms, it's like four mattresses. So people like me that only have $100, $150 can just rent a mattress and four other people in a room. We don't care. We're students. We go to school. We come back. Most of 99% of our time, we're at school. Even on weekends, we're at school. So it's closer to school. It's better for me. And it's cheaper. Use a toilet. Sometimes I'm like, I'll go to school and use the toilet there, whatever. But then I was like, this is crazy. And I started calculating and I'm like, how much is the house? If they're buying it, so I started checking and I'm like, okay, so if it's this, how much are the expenses? So I start calculating and I just got addicted. I'm like, one room is paying for everything. How is this? Nobody doing this? And I'm like, I know what I'm going to do when I'm done. When I'm done with school, I know exactly what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do. So that's how it all started. And I just went all in. I'm an obsessive person. Even back home, I don't want to go home at school. When I go home, I'm the abuse kid, right? When I go to school, that's the smart kid that's going to put our school in the map and stuff like that. So I'm always in the library reading books that were donated. Sometimes I read books that I'm not supposed to read just because it's there. I don't want to go home. So I'm obsessive in nature when it comes to doing something. Yeah, so I went all in researching. And then I went on YouTube because it's free. And I started listening to podcasts. This is how I came about other podcasts as well, like the one we talked about.
Yeah.
And that's how I got
and we
hooked.
Definitely have to talk about
it. Yep. We're going to talk about this podcast right here. But yeah, that's how it all started. And I'm like, when I have money, this is what I'm going to do. So I started researching, listening to different podcasts. Can't afford the books right now. But anything that I see free, I read it.
So you just absorbed everything.
I was just absorbing.
One thing I will notice that, because this is kind of fast forwarding to successful people, and this is actually what I always tell me and my team, we're always talking about this, is someone has to be in a survival mentality.
Yeah.
And that's really what you had, because you started like from where you came from, living on the floor, you had to just survive.
Yeah, survive.
The second thing, you have to be obsessive.
Yeah.
You have to be obsessed.
You have to want it so bad,
And you can't just learn, because now you're going to get to the next thing, because you just learned.
Yeah.
Now it's doing, right?
Yeah.
So I just thought that stood out really well.
Yeah.
So what was your first move?
Yeah. So my first move is after I graduate is when I'm going to get a job. So as international students, you can't just walk, right? You have to get the paperwork to get that done, right? So I went through FGM in Africa and I realized I could apply for asylum and stuff. I don't know if I can talk about my immigration status now. I have a green card now, but then I didn't. So I applied for that by myself. Wrote a letter to pro bono lawyers all around Illinois. Listen, I did everything just not to go home. I wrote out a whole my life story and just said, I'll just send it out. Somebody might listen to it. I can't afford a lawyer right now. So I sent it out to all. Somebody told me about pro bono. Some lawyers do pro bono. And I sent it to all nonprofit organizations. I just Googled it and sent it all to them. Email them on the website and stuff. And one of them reached out to me and said, well, we have one of the attorneys that's doing pro bono. We looked at your case and wants to help you. And they helped me. Yeah. So when I graduate, so as an international student, you can't just work. You have to have the paperwork or you have to have a company sponsor your visa.
That's right.
To give you the work permit. So you have 1 year to do that. So when I graduated, before I graduate, I'm already looking, right? I got one. But they didn't think, they was like, your English is so good, we thought you were a green card holder or something, whatever. And I'm like, no, I'm not. And they're like, yeah, we can't sponsor your visa, unfortunately. And I was like, oh, my bummer. So I'll do interviews, but I'm not getting the jobs. So I was working with this recruiter who sent me this job that says classified, whatever. I was just interviewing. If you're a computer person or software person, you know that the interviews are technical. They will tell you a problem and they want you to fix it while they watch you. So I would do those. It's so intense. It's so hard. And then you don't get it, but you get the answer. It's so annoying.
Yeah, that would be annoying.
Yeah. So I did multiple, a lot of interviews, right? So I did this interview. It had so many rules, like don't do this, don't do that. I was like, I don't know why this company is like that. I don't know what a classified means. I'm from a village. So I applied to this interview, did this. And first, I'm leaving this apartment. Now I'm in Georgia now because my husband just moved from ADP, Pasadena to here. We just got married after I graduated. So that's how I came here. So I was applying for jobs. turned out to be CDC. And I did an interview, and the guy was like, do you even know who you interviewed? I was like, I don't know. I just did it. He's like, it's the CDC, and they love you so much. They want you to start, blah, blah, blah. I was like, really? And he was like, okay, go ahead and send me your green card. I was like, I don't have a green card. He's like, what? And then he hung up. I was like, there goes that job again. But then he emailed me. I was like, well, they loved you so much, they're willing to do it. So
that's how I got
the job as a data scientist at CDC.
What an amazing, look at all your stories, how you just seen
it's
fire.
God. Yeah. I feel like it's God helping me out, because I,
Well, 100%.
Yeah. So that's how I got there. Started working for CDC, and I'm like, okay, now is the time to save the money. Like, so for any company in IT, when they hire you, they have to give you like a 6 months grace period before they give you full time.
It's like six months.
Yeah. Okay. So they want to see if you can perform, because you can go get a good, good CV, what it's called, resume, and you know. So you have to make sure you can actually implement, and then after it will take you. So within that 3 months, that's 2019 at this time, and I started work because they loved me. I was getting less pay, but that's okay. Like, I've never heard that kind of money, okay? I never heard like $2,000 in 2 weeks. So I was happy, and I just started saving. And then before the 6 months ended, they took me full time. So I didn't have to wait that time. So at that time, I had saved up like $8,000 at the time. That's all I have.
How did you feel having $8,000?
Listen, I was rich. I was so rich. I keep calculating, because $1 is like, at that time, it's like 60, 50 something dollars. Now it's 60 something, but that time it's like 50 something.
In my
currency. So I used to calculate, if I have $200, like this is, if I send $200 to my family, when I do, they're so happy, because that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So imagine $8,000.
And you're like, man, I'm rich.
I've made it. Yeah, I made it. So so I started looking. I was like, okay, so where should I look? By this time, I'm already researching, because from the podcasts I listened to and the books I read this time, it was like, start with the local banks that from the city that you want to invest in. I was like, okay, fine. Mm-hmm. How do I get to the local banks? I went and Googled them, and I started calling. Some of them hang up on, well, most of them hang up on me, because they don't know what I'm saying. If you think my accent is thick now, imagine 7 years ago. It was so bad. So they were just, I was like, I don't know what you're saying. Yeah. So I was like, okay, let me just keep trying. No is very, like, no doesn't turn me off. It's like,
Try the next one.
Yeah. So I did that until I got one bank to listen to me. The lady was working, and now she's the vice president of the bank, right? Imagine at that time she was just working there, and she was like, "You sound like you really want this so bad. I can hear the excitement. Something tells me like you're gonna do great. But let me just give you a piece of advice. They're not gonna get a loan now. What you can do is, because you like literally new." Because your credit score is like your newborn. It's like in the 500. I was like, but I've only been here 2 years, of course. It's like, so this is what you do. Yeah. Go get a credit card. You work for CDC, right? Go to a secure line of credit, like 200, 300. Utilities, what build up. Come back in a year or two.
That's right.
And I was like, okay, I went and did all of that. Go to a line of credit with CDC, credit union. Uh-huh. Went and got the Discover and Capital, whatever, card. Mm-hmm. And I started building up. But I was like, I did that, and I went back to her. And because I found this deal in the Midwest that's like 60 something thousand. It's a triplex. The owners are going through a divorce. They just want to sell and settle.
They're basically giving it away.
It's a triplex. On paper, it says it's already rented. I'm obsessed with the numbers. I calculated it. I was like, let me just present it nicely and just send it to her. And I did. She probably like, why did I give this lady my email? But I sent it to her. She was like, this looks good. However, the underwriters are the one that makes the decision. So I can't really promise you. I told her I did all the stuff you said I'm gonna do that you want me to do. I'm gonna build the credit. I'm sure working on that. Yeah. I already got that, and I put the utilities. And I don't have student loans. I don't have any loans. I don't have a car. I take transportation to go to CDC. Actually, my team actually sent out a blast email to everyone and said, we're looking for a carpool for somebody in Alpharetta. Whoa. Do you guys, like, I'm like, we're like, you can't drive. You're 29 years old. And I'm like, yeah, but I've never been in the car seat to drive. Like, whose car am I ever going to drive where I came from? But then, so it was like, okay, go ahead. I will send this to the underwriting team, and we'll get back to you. I'll let you know what they say. And she came back and said, well, they looked at it. They want to give you a chance.
Oh, that's awesome.
And that's how I got that first property. And all hell loose break, or whatever that you guys say. It was bad. Everything was so bad. But, yeah, we'll get to that in the next few minutes.
Yeah, I'd like to know. So You want to tell us like the structure of the deal then? You give 20% down?
Yeah, so 20% down. Mm-hmm. I've already, and I told her, I've already discussed with the sellers that they can pay my closing fees because I only have, I was like, worst case scenario, each unit, I told them how much each unit is bringing in the area. So I said, two bedrooms are going for $750, $800. This then. And then one bedrooms are going for this and it's $2, $2, and $1. I was like, worst case scenario, just one tenant pay. My mortgage would be about 100 and some, maximum 300 and something. Right. Like right now, and I did a 15-year loan. That's my first deal. Just to entice and say, I will not even do 30. I'll do 15. She was like, it's fine.
Yeah.
So they were like, okay, we'll do it. That's when they did it. But my down payment was 20%. The seller paid for the closing costs and all of that. They just wanted to, he just wanted to divorce. Yeah, they're going through a divorce. They want to settle.
That's motivation, right?
So when I took over the property, this is COVID time, shutdown happened.
Oh, no.
I know.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm working for CDC. My department, infectious disease, COVID right under us. So I work sometimes 4 a.m. in the morning because I'm running reports. So as a data scientist, I work with the lab scientists. So they go in the lab, do the research, analyze the data so they can make reports and send it out or so somebody can read it, right?
Yes.
So, of course, when they get out of the lab, the report has to be ready for them to do whatever they need to do or whatever. Mm-hmm. So imagine that, but I'll put the CDC laptop here. I put my laptop here for analyzing deals and stuff in the middle of it. And I'm like going away, you know, work till the middle of night. And and we got an award for the COVID too, which was amazing for CDC, the work we did.
Did you get a bonus and everything?
Yes, I did. Okay, I got a promo, bono, all of that, yeah.
Yeah.
So with the deal, it turned out that on paper, the agent lied just to make it enticing. One of the tenants wasn't paying for months, like 8 months or more. And then the other one, this is April. I closed in April 2020. So shutdowns already happened, but I was under contract around February. So we didn't know that that was going to happen.
Yeah, that's right,
yeah. But I knew that this could be big because we don't know what this is at the time, but that's work-related, information. So I was like, oh, something's going to happen. We don't know yet, but if this hits hit the fan, shutdown's going to happen. See, I'm getting American now. But yeah, so on paper, they said this was rented, this is how much it's bringing in. No, that wasn't the case. One unit, tenant hasn't paid for months. The other unit tenant's about to leave and one was vacant. The tenant just left. So the one that was vacant, I had to turn it around. It's like, okay, what's the best way? I've already read about Section 8, succession proof. I was like, let me do Section 8 on this one. So we cleaned that out, rented it to Section 8. I have a property manager at the time.
What state is this, by the way?
This is in Illinois.
Illinois, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So, because for me, I was like, I couldn't afford Alpharetta. I was like, let me start where I know. And I know Illinois from Advocate, Illinois. And the experience I have in real estate started there.
That's right, so it made sense
for me to do it there. Mm-hmm. So the other unit, turned it around, rented Section 8. The other, you know, I did cash for keys. I was like, we could give you some money. I think it was $300, $500 or something. Mm-hmm. And you can just go. Because people, you know I could rent it on Section 8 because the demand for Section 8 was there. So she accepted it. And, you know, I rented that on Section 8. Now, before I rented for Section 8, the one downstairs that haven't paid for months, the state was giving, you know how they were giving nonprofit organizations were helping helping people that are behind rent, nonprofit organizations and charity of the foundations. So there was one that was the tenant has to apply with the landlord. So the money doesn't go to the tenant, it goes to the landlord directly. So you have to, if you're behind, apply with your landlord. So there's a segment that I signed and she signed. So we got about 8,000 or close to 9,000 from that. Because she hasn't paid she hasn't paid the previous landlord for months. So now she got all this money. And I took that, renovated the other, fixed up the other unit, rented all out to Section 8.
You're a survivor.
Yeah, I made it.
Was she stressed out during that time like crazy?
Yeah. And I'm doing this out of state, can't travel, can't do anything. And the property manager took advantage of me, started, you know, now it's cash flowing. It's like, she's over there. I can do whatever I want with the money. So I was getting receipts for work that don't make sense. Like he was just taking the money. So he would send me receipts. Like, I'm like, I know the square footage for that room, flooring cannot be that expensive. And I've joined so many landlord groups at this point. So I just send them receipts. I was like, does it make sense for, flooring or painting of this unit to be this much. It was like, no, I did my whatever, whatever for this amount, half the price, a quarter of the price. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, something's wrong, but I can't prove it. So I was like, but he always mentioned Chester this, Chester that, Chester this, Chester said the word Chester, that's the contractor he used. Mm. I was like, well, how many Chesters can be in a small town? I'll find this Chester. Mm-hmm. And I went searching and I found Chester and I sent him a message on Facebook. Yeah. And I was like, hey, I'm the owner of property so-and-so. You worked on it. I really want to ask you some questions if you don't mind. He messaged me. He said, well, I have a roof job right now, but I get off late. If you don't mind, I can call you. I was like, sure. He called me and I was like, I just want clarity. I own this property. I know you don't work with, I stole in the property manager's name. Sorry. And he, I get too excited. It was like, he was like, okay. He was like, okay. Yeah. I would love to clarify. What is the problem? And I was like, well, can you tell me if these receipts are mine? He was like, yeah, this one's for property so-and-so. This one's for property so-and-so. This so he was taking all the property receipts, like, you know, that you buy from a Home Depot, Lowe's, or Menards and giving it to me. Now, I can't, there's no way I can prove that that's not true because that's the receipt. Yeah. So it was like, that's how I know. He was like, I don't mind doing a 3-way call just to clarify my name. I'm an honest person. It's an old, you know, person. Older guy is like, I don't do this. I've been doing this business for years. I never, try to take money from anybody. I don't mind. So I was like, oh, no, you don't. That's okay. I fired him and I called Chester and I was like, if I find another property, would you be willing to work for me? He's like, yeah. He's worked for me full time since then, made millions of dollars with me.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, he's my guy. Yep, he's my dad.
All right, so for those at home, real quick, because there's something, why would you give someone a cash for keys? I think they're like, really, some of these guys are either new or already kind of have one or two rental properties, and some people don't know why would you pay a tenant cash for the keys so they leave. Can you explain that?
Yes. So I just did cash for keys like literally two weeks ago. Even as a savvy investor, well, I'll call myself now, more experienced than before.
Yeah.
But the reason why you do cash flow, especially during COVID time, most especially during COVID time, is you can't evict somebody. If you have to go through the eviction process, it's long, right?
Especially in Illinois.
Especially that time, yeah. And especially, imagine that time. Even now, it's annoying. Like, I'd rather give you $1,000 and have a renovation done than go through court for 2 months. Like, you've delayed my income, you've delayed my project, you've delayed literally everything. So cash for keys is when you give money to the tenant in exchange for the keys. So make sure when you're doing cash for keys, don't just give them the money and say, hey, take this money, give me the keys back, and we're even. No. What you want to do is have a contract that says, you say, I give you $1,000, you give me back my keys, and you get everything out, you give me my keys. Yes. So on the day of cash and keys, with the day that you're closing, get the person, your handyman or your contractor, chain the locks.
Right away.
While the tenant is outside, everything is out, give them to sign, chain the locks, and then give them the money.
Yeah.
So now you have access to the property, and now they can't leave because they just signed it, and they're out already. So you chain the locks, they can't get in. So when they do try to break in, you can actually remove them the same day.
That's right.
It's nothing
There's
like
a lot
court.
Of people that want to get into real estate, but they don't understand. You got to be really strategic, just like cash keys when you start to manage properties.
So
right now, where are you buying your property? Are you buying all around the United States?
Yes, now I'm buying. I'm buying Savannah, Georgia. I'm buying in Illinois, multiple cities. I'm also buying in Ohio.
In Ohio?
Yeah.
What part of Ohio?
Cleveland. Dayton.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm saying Dayton like American. Before I would say Dayton.
Your English is amazing.
Thank you.
Sounds good. I'd like to hear some audio from you. Said it was more thick a long time ago.
Oh yeah, thicker.
my dad's from Korea, so he sounds like Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
Your English is better. Than
oh no, you should hear me. You should hear me say "ball girl" when I go to that. I'm like, I want a burger. They're like, a what now? I'm like, I know you know this is McDonald's. Of course, I want a burger. They're like, a what? My son still rectifies me. He's like, it's called pear, and I'm like, it's pear. He says, it's pear, mom, and I'm like, okay.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Well, so is your husband in real estate with you too? No,
no, he's a nerd. Just computers. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I forced him to buy his first rental.
How's he enjoying that?
I'm managing it.
Oh, okay.
I'm doing all the work on it. I just wanted him to own something, but yeah.
Absolutely. I think honestly, after they get past a few, they'll get addicted. How many did you get, like, so Did you buy any of them portfolios or one at a time?
No. So I started with portfolio. I started with single. So I started with that one. And then I got one in Cleveland for $68,000. That was a duplex. So once I get that one settled already and it's cash flowing now, I have a new property manager. Property is fixed up. I was like, where else can I get that deal? I was like, I'm not finding that deal anymore. Like, are there going to be any more deals like this? I was like, you know what? On other platforms that we talked about, I was like, let me go to these landlord groups and see what other places people are investing. And Ohio keep coming. This because of during that time is COVID, a lot of people like from California, the California investors were buying heavy on there because, you know, California, you don't have 100,000 homes, right? It's more of your down payment. It's 100,000 or 200,000. So a lot of people were going to Cleveland. I was like, oh, let me check out Cleveland. So I started going to pages that are discussing buying Cleveland. I introduced myself, like, hey, I'm a new investor. I see a lot of people talking about investing in Cleveland, cheaper properties, you know, to get in. Where should I buy? Where shouldn't I buy? So people will give me advice and stuff. Buy here, buy here, don't buy here. And then most of the areas they're saying, don't buy. I can't afford them. So I was like, I can't afford 200,000 ones. Under 100, yes. I had to look. I don't want where it's like too ghetto or too bad. I want it to be in between.
Yeah, you don't want to have to take a gun. You know,
exactly. But I can't also afford over there. So I wanted like the balance. Like I don't
want working class.
Yeah, working class. And I found this duplex that was $68,000. It was an attorney that owned it. She renovated it and she's not interested in real estate and she wanted to sell it. Already had tenants in it. Already cash flowing. So when I bought it, she had renovated it and put tenant in there. New tenants.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was bringing in about $1,350 or something like that. $750 for one and six something for the other one. My mortgage $200. The same bank.
Same bank.
The same lady. Mortgage is $254.
Oh, wow.
And they pay all the utilities and I get $1,350.
Yeah. So what does this lady think now that she's got to see from you? She pretty much denied you the first time. Right? Then you got it the second time.
Yeah.
How does her
relationship? We've built a great relationship. We're basically like friends now. Yeah. And she financed my deals now and my students as well. And she's introduced me to the commercial side of the bank. I do commercial deals with the other side, the commercial bankers in the same bank. Yeah. And they finance most of my mentees as well. But yeah, that's how I got that one. And I was like, okay, I'm on the roll. So I started buying. So my cash flow went, because I'm doing Section 8 on all of them, the cash flow went from 1,000 something to 2,000 something and then 4,000 something. So I kept buying cheaper ones. So I buy like for 40,000, like put 20% down, renovate it. Now it's worth 80. I kept going, kept going, just keep going. And then I remember before the end of 2020, I was at 7 or maybe 4, I'm not sure. But then it scaled faster when I started buying. I found this seller that goes to auctions and buy this property, but it's not interested in renovating or anything. Just wants to sell it for 10,000 profit, 20,000 profit. So I'll buy this property. Now I have Chester. So I started buying. Chester. Yep. Yeah. So
we
I buy
need to Chester.
Yeah. I'll buy Chester. 5 properties in a package and he was just throwing them around. And the person seller financed it. Seller financed the deal. Okay. So I didn't even pay interest. So they just want cash flow to come on.
Explain that deal then. Since we're creative now.
So seller financing is where the seller serves as the bank. So you don't get to get a loan and do all that, you know, credit checks and all of that. So we had an agreement. You see that I'm interested in this. So our agreement was I pay him $500 for each property. And I just pay until I'm done. 500 until it's done.
Zero interest.
Nothing. Yeah, right?
No credit.
He's not. Yeah. He doesn't. He's not interested. He doesn't have contractors. He's not interested in renovating. He just wants constant. So he will go to that auction, buy them, and just want to continue having cash flow. I guess he
just keep it as a note. Yeah. Take the library.
Yeah. Take the library. Okay. So what I started doing, I was like, okay. So the first packet was like 5 properties or 6, and the second one. So I kept going. So the first packet, what I did is, I took the property that has the least amount of work and I have Chester start on those and his guys, right? So like 2 weeks and turn them around, rent to Section 8, 1,500. Take a 4-bedroom, rent to 1,800. So I kept going like that. And then the cash flow for one property will pay the 500 for the three.
Awesome.
So I kept going.
Just kept it as a machine going.
Yeah, so the cash flow went all the way to 10 grand. Now I can wait 2-3 months to buy. Then 2 months to buy because the down payment for this house is cheaper. So I kept doing that. And then I have another package deal with the guy. So I just kept going from 15,000, 20,000, to 20,000, to kept going, kept going. And I also doing Cleveland as well. So I kept going. That's how I grew. And then 2021, that actually super charged my portfolio is when I had LabCorp, the pharmaceutical company, reach out to me on LinkedIn. They keep telling me, we want to hire you, leave CDC, come work for a week. We'll pay you double, whatever they pay you. I was like, I don't know. I really like this job. They gave me this chance and I love working here. It's nice. I mean, it's the federal government, right? So they were like, well, we'll pay you double. So one of my friends, I met them from this real estate group. It was, I was like, because she always said, oh, I have two jobs and whatever. I was like, how do you do two jobs? You're American citizen, you can do it. He said, no, anybody can. The IRS don't care as long as you pay your taxes. I was like, I can have two jobs. He's like, yeah. I was like, okay. So I went and reached out to LabCorp and I was like, I'll do it. Because I'm working from home at this time because it's shut down.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So the scientists will be at the lab, but I don't have to be at the lab because I don't even have access to the lab. I'm not a lab scientist. I'm in the cubicle. So I was like, oh, you can work from home. So I work from home. So I put laptop for CDC, laptop for LabCorp, laptop for real estate. I'm a hustler. You know what? I'm like, who's going
to... You have an obsessive personality. Yes. Now, I do want to know if one thing changed, though. Okay. You said that you never kept your salary. Do you keep your salary?
No.
Or do you just give it all to your family?
Oh, no. I give the people I'm supposed to give. Before it was taken. It was yeah. But yeah, so that income, the six-figure income from LabCorp plus, you know, I was just dumping everything. I don't have I came from nothing, so I'm not buying Louis Vuitton. I don't even know what that is, right? I'm putting everything. I'm just turning them around. And then what actually, so after that job and getting that income and the CDC income and the cash flow already, I was just buying. I went from buying every month to multiple every week. That's what I was doing. So it's a matter of, and my contractor kept hiring more guys. So it's like, we're turning around properties in 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Just rented them on Section 8. What supercharged it more is when I had this, of course, 1 year after COVID, people wanted to get out. Like, people have been in the house for a long time.
That's right.
When you hear, oh, Airbnb, you can get a house, you can get rent somebody's property and re-rent it, sublease it, and get money.
The rental.
I was like, this is so popular in Atlanta. How about I do this in smaller cities? But I'm already an investor. I want to own the property. I don't want to take somebody else's.
That's smart. I like that.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, how about I do this in smaller towns? I bet there are travel nurses in hospitals in a small town too. Yeah. So I was like, okay. So I reached out to the banks and I was like, I want to do this. Here in Atlanta, people are making a lot of money renting on Airbnb. People are traveling, but they rent to travel nurses and business profit. I was like, oh, that's not going to work in a small town. You live in a big city. That's not. Just do your Section 8. This is great money. You're doing great. And I'm like, no. I'm not listening to you. I'm just going to go in there. I was like, I'll go to another bank. At that time, I've already introduced to another local bank. Of course,
Hey, build a relationship.
Yeah. They came back and said, we want to do this with you. But I went to another bank and they were like, the lender was like, I thought you were crazy when you came to me for this, but it worked out. So I found this 8-unit apartment complex. I hope I'm not going too over time.
No, this is what we're here for.
Oh, okay. Yes. So I have this, found this 8-unit apartment, right? The seller's wife was like, there was a fire incident. And of course, the city get involved. You know how that goes. They wanted to do this, all of that. So the whole process took them like almost a year to get all the violations out because there was one of the tenants that started fire in one of the units. So maybe one or two units had caught fire. The others were fine, right? So the wife was like, no, we're done with this. So he wanted to just get rid of it. It was going for one something. He actually listed for two something. He kept putting the price down. He just wanted it out, pay off the loan that's left. So when I got it under contract when I went in, I saw that, you know how they say 10,000 reduction. You can tell the deduction.
You can tell
the motivation is 140 something when I had it, but I closed at 120. What special about that property is it was 1 mile from the hospital, two hospitals.
Wow. Okay.
So it's like, worst case scenario, even if I have two tenants, I'll be fine because the mortgage is not going to be that expensive.
That's fine.
So I had Chester come down there, give me a scope of work, $10,000 for each unit. So about $80,000-$85,000 renovation. And I was like, I can finance the whole furnishing for myself. You know, so what I did was exactly that. So what I did was like, the bank was like, feel like they felt sorry for me. Like, this is not going to work out. That's what they felt. They were like, we'll give you a grace. You know how they give you no payment, just interest payment just for 2 months. They gave me 3 months. In the 3 months, I made $44,000 in the 3 months. Because what I did was, because it has entrance, front entrance, and back entrance. I had them start upstairs. So Chester moved in with his guys to the units that are working, and I stocked the fridge for them and everything. Because it's awesome. 1 hour from his city, so they will stay from Monday to Friday, and they will go home. All they do is work, and I buy them dinner, and I travel back and forth and check on them and everything. So we start upstairs, you know, we did the units that didn't need a lot of work. Mm-hmm. While they're finishing up, I'm buying stuff from Amazon, furnishing everything. They put the beds for me. I travel, go furnish the place and leave. While I furnish it, I list it. It get rented before I leave. Like, I'm like, they don't even know I'm making money already, but I'm only paying interest.
Yeah.
And then I was having doctors and nurses, and then I started having contracts, and I'm like, I need another one. But that's how I completed that, and I was making so much money on it. And I was like,
nurses were paying outstanding.
At that time, they were paying me so much. Yeah. So like a 2-bedroom would go for $750-$800 on normal market rents. I was getting $3,000.
Yeah.
And then some of the units I put monthly, some of the units I put, because I partner with a local artist that do, I'm probably going to say this wrong, murals.
Yeah.
So he did all these nice murals on the wall. So some of the nurses were like, I want this one. I don't want this one. So they were specific on what they want, so they would pay higher. So some of the units I put on like Airbnb for short time, because the turnover was fast. Like so many people wanted to book it. Even if I increased the price, people still booking. I was like, okay. So I put some for the nurses, constant, and some for like in and out.
Normal,
like,
in and out.
Yeah, so I was making like double prices on that. Some units.
Airbnb, when it's working well,
it worked well.
Amazing.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, it works well. Especially then I was like, okay, then I started buying lake houses for $135,000, $100,000, close to smaller towns. And mm-hmm. I started doing that. And it's like, oh, we want to book here for our conference. Like the company wants to, you know, retrieve. Host a 2-day retreat, they call it. And I was like, how are you going to pay the insurance companies? Oh, we'll pay you $16,000. We have a family that wants to stay there for 2 months.
I'll think about it.
I was like, but yeah. So all that money, buy more. I just keep going. I don't buy anything.
So you just keep compounding.
I just keep compounding from my W-2s and then from the Section 8s and from the midterm rentals. And then I needed another 12-unit. And I started buying another 10-unit. And I just keep going.
So what is your goal from now to 5 years from now? Where do you want to be?
Yeah. So I just got into big commercial. So self-storage is nice to see that, you know, that cash coming the first of the month. Just like I love, if you guys haven't noticed yet, let me look straight the cap. I love my money coming the first of the month. Like I want to get paid first before you even get to the place. So
this is the perfect example of addiction to real estate. This is exactly, it's actually fun when we do our little events and meetups. I want to help you get past your first, second, third, and addiction begins.
Yeah.
And this is the full lookout right there. So.
I got hooked when I saw those students making that money, their parents make it. I was like, their house will be paid off fast. Like,
That's hard to begin, but as you start going, it starts getting easier
and easier.
Right?
Yeah.
So tell us about your first storage unit then.
Yeah.
Where did you find it? How did you find it?
Yeah.
How much? Tell us.
So every time I find a storage unit, somebody who has more money always bid on it and get more. They're offering cash. And I'm like, I don't have $2 million cash. But then I was like, okay, I need to find something. I love like something that's distressed that I can add value. So I can get it for lower, you know. And I already have a team in Illinois. Now I have property managers. Mm-hmm. I have property manager for midtown rentals, property manager for Section 8, property manager for, you know, Airbnbs and shorter stays. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I have a team there. I don't want to, let me find a storage here. I'll look in Georgia too, and I'll go look at it and somebody will make an offer. Yeah. So I was like, okay, let me look for deals that I'm going to need value in. It's going to be close to my team. They can go. I can have somebody manage it. When I travel to go look at my renovations and start projects, I can, you know, it's easier managed that way. So I'll go on a contract and the deal will fall through. Because, you know, sometimes mom and pops, they don't give you the right documentation. So, and the bank's like, no, and stuff. So I found this deal for almost $550,000. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Very mismanaged, right? 95 units.
Here in Georgia or Illinois?
No, in Illinois. Okay. Needed a lot of work. Mm-hmm. It has a half an acre land that could be developed. That's the things I look for. They had two tenants that have a boat and a trailer. I was like, okay, I can do trailer parks and boats and stuff. So that's that part. And of course, implement systems, software, billboards, ads, technology.
Keep it nice.
That's exactly what I did. And cash flowing now.
That's amazing. How do you like the storage units compared to the same
it.
Family?
I love it. No toilets. No tenants say, I want this room. I don't want this room.
They don't pay rent, you just lock it.
Yeah, they just lock it. And I have somebody in ground that does the lawn. I have somebody in ground to go. If a tenant doesn't pay, lock the place, lock your unit. And I have the system from home. I could, like, it takes about maybe 30 minutes a week to manage. I mean, now I have a team. And speaking of the team, I had this company that I was helping, a marketing company here, that was helping. I was like supposed to pay them like $40,000. I was like, there has to be a way. Like $40,000 is a lot to pay. So what I did was, remember LabCorp, working for LabCorp, I had this girl who graduated from college. You know how American companies would hire people outside in India to do work for less?
Yes, yeah. Like
right?
Yeah.
So she, like outsourcing, of course they pay them lesser than if they were here.
That's right.
I mean, yeah, that's how it works. So I was like, this girl, I was pregnant with my second baby, and when I'm feeling sick, she usually helped me because I'm in her team. I would say, hey, can you finish up my course for me? And sometimes I help her finish up the programs or check her course for her. So at the time, I was really sick with the pregnancy. I just became pregnant, and I was like, you know what? Can you do? It's like she was helping me a lot, and I was like, hey, I might want to hire this girl. So I told her, hey, how much does LabCorp pay you? And she told me, and I was like, what? I was like, if I give you double, would you come work? She said, yeah. So yeah, she said the money that you helped me, because when she helped me out, I give her like $100, $200. She was like, that was paying for my master's program in India.
Oh.
So I gave her three times, and then she left LabCorp. She worked full time for me. And now she has 10 other employees for me from India, from their college that graduated.
Oh my
goodness. Less work, like marketing, social media, all of it is handled by them. So if you message me on Instagram, it's probably not me that's responding. I'm just saying. Yeah.
I'm new to personal branding too, and I'm realizing how much is to it. I cannot believe how many messages.
I get thousands of messages a day.
You can't keep up with it. No. And it's not that you don't want to, you just can't.
Yeah. It's a lot.
So tell us, that you said that you're doing personal branding and you have mentees. That means you're doing some kind of mentorship.
Yeah.
Tell us about the mentorship first.
Yeah. So at the beginning, when I started investing, of course, the podcast and all the advices from real estate investors I get, I was like, I don't want to be on social media for anything else. I just want this. So I created a whole page called Building Wealth from Rentals. And I'm like, I'm going to follow all real estate, all business and stuff. So that's what I did. And I was like, this is like to hold me accountable. Yes. So, like when I buy a property for $40,000, I renovate $20,000, now it's worth $100,000, I'll post the before and after. I'll post how much I bought it for, the numbers, how much the cash flow, the rent, even the lease with the tenant, I posted and hide the tenant's lease. And people are like, how are you doing this from out of state? Like, is this possible? And I said, yeah, you have to do this. And I started like basically coaching for free. I didn't even know what that meant. And people come to me, thank you so much. I just closed on my property today or last week. Me and my husband are flying to go look at this property over there. Mm-hmm. What should I do? And I'm telling them, like, after it became exhausting. So I was like, And somebody was like, can you? I was like, I'm really busy these days. I have work, blah, blah. She said, I'll pay you. I was like, you pay me? He was like, yeah. And I was like, okay. I didn't know. I was like, how much? He's like, well, how much do you want? And I just asked for any of that. I don't remember what I did. And I did. And I was like, this is so cool. And I started, I was like, let me find what this is. So I started following people that do coaching and stuff. I started going to webinars, like, how do you sell something online? How do you sell a coaching program? And then I started that. I was like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and try this out. So that's how I started. And that's the IT company, marketing company I hired that wanted $40,000.
Yeah,
so I was
I
could have somebody do this because I'm a tech person. We can build funnels and stuff ourselves. And that's what I have the team do. But that's how it started with the coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're over 900 students that I thought
amazing.
Real estate. Yeah.
So like, is it a course or just training or how does that work?
So at the beginning, from the coaches that I learned from, it was like 101, right? So I did the 101 and I was like, mind you, I have my 9-to-5 job and I went on, this is my first time. I was like, you know how they say, I want to change two women's lives. DM me, coach, and I'll learn. I said, five people. Oh, I know. I said, I'm going to help you buy your first rental property in 30 days. If you're interested, here's my calendar. Book a free one-on-one. I went to sleep. I just put that in. I went to sleep. My calendar was full. But I was like, I have a job.
Yeah.
So whole day, I took the time off and talked to them. Whole day, from morning to night, talked to everyone. And then one of them closed and paid me $5,000. I was like, ooh, this is
nice.
Yeah, I like this. And then I started coaching that person. But the mistake I did was oh, because I feel like $5,000 is a lot to pay me just to tell you something I already know.
Yeah.
And I was like, the whole year, anytime, call me. It became too much because they're calling me at all times, every time. And I was like, yeah, this is not going to work out. So when I finished that badge, I was like, I got to do like group one, have a specific time, 1 month, that's it.
Yeah.
And I teach you everything in 10. So that's what I started doing, group coaching.
Oh, that's great. How does that make you feel to help other people?
Oh, it feels so good when people close. Even before, when I was doing it free, when somebody come and say, we actually travel, they send me pictures of them traveling, looking at the property, just how I taught them. Mm-hmm. It's just nice. And then somebody send me a picture. I just closed today. Thank you so much. And I was like, so I just post the stories and people keep coming. People keep coming.
That's right. Oh, one other thing I forgot to ask about the real estate stuff. So I think I was talking to Tim. He said you do the BRRRR strategy.
Yeah.
Can you explain what what the BRRRR strategy is?
Yeah. So BRRRR means buy, renovate, rent, buy, renovate, rent, and refinance and repeat.
Yes.
So it's like you buy the property, and basically that's what I was doing. I didn't even know what a BRRRR was, because I'll buy the property for $40,000, renovate it for $15,000, $20,000. It's worth more. Now I can go get all my money back and then repeat. So that's what I was doing.
Repeat
so,
over and
yeah,
over.
Repeat over and over. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll just take my down payment would be from this property that I just purchased. So if I buy it for like $60,000, put $20,000 renovation, that's $80,000, but now it's worth $150,000. Mm-hmm. So I'll go to the bank and they will give me 20%, 80%, 75%. Well, I recently just started getting 80%. Before it's like 75% off the new value.
Yeah.
So I'll take that $20,000 again or whatever thousand and then put it on the next property.
Yeah.
And then I have Section 8 tenants pay everything in my mortgage. And I make sure the utilities are all in their name. So I'm only paying insurance, property taxes, and of course my mortgage.
Yeah. So if you had to coach someone saying, here's like the basic gist, what would you say? If someone says, I have $10,000, what should I do? What would you say?
So $10,000 depends on what market. Some markets, $10,000 is not going to get you anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people say, oh, $10,000, you're going to get, except you negotiated that the closing, because $10,000, you have to have reserve, you have to have closing costs and stuff.
That's right.
With $10,000, right now in the market, it's going to be tough to put just $10,000, right? You might need more than $10,000.
Okay.
But I want you to educate yourself first, right?
So invest in yourself.
Invest in yourself first, or start with wholesaling.
All right, explain what wholesaling is.
So wholesaling is when you go find, you see how I find a landlord that's distressed, going through something, wants to sell the property, going through a divorce. That's a distressed landlord that wants it's in a problem, wants to get rid of the problem or have a house, they want to get rid of it. You find somebody who's looking to sell a property. So when you see those properties that you know is vacant, nobody lives there, the grass is grown, it's boarded up, that's a distressed property. Right? You want to check out who owns it. You want to reach out to them and say, hey, I want to buy this property. But before, you have to do your numbers. That means the education, right?
That's right.
Do the numbers so you know what the properties are going for in the area, how much the property is worth before you even contact them. So you know when you're negotiating. So basically wholesaling is when you find a distressed landlord who wants to sell a property. And sometimes a distressed landlord is not necessarily distressed. They probably live in a different state. Their uncle passed away and left them a house in Georgia somewhere.
Like the divorce.
Divorce, yeah. Yeah. They don't know what to do with the property. But if you offer it, hey, I know that you own, I see that you own this property. It's vacant or, you know, would you like to sell it? Homes in the area go for this, but I would like to buy it, get it off your hand for, so if the houses are going for 100,000, you want to get it at 80, right? For example. Mm-hmm. So that means you get it under contract. So you sign a contract with them that you will close on this property in 30 days, but then you turn around and go to an investor like us and say, because you know what we're looking for, properties that type to renovate and fix it and get value on it. You tell me, hey Sean, hey Yamu, I have this property. I got it under 80, but you know it's worth 100,000, but I can sell it for you to less. So you sign two contracts. So the first one with the landlord and the second one with the investor.
Exactly.
So at closing, where you go to the title company or the attorney's office, it'll be double closing. First closing between you and the investor, the wholesaler, and then the landlord, because the landlord gets to go home with the money. So, and then you take the difference. So if it was, if it's worth 100,000, you got it under contract for 80, you sell it to the investor for 90. So you get a 10,000 difference.
So it's a win-win.
Yeah, it's a win-win situation.
And you don't have to have any money.
You don't have to have any money. Like, you put in the time, though, because you have to find the property. Sometimes you can do door knocking. Sometimes you can drive around, drive for dollars, they call it. Or you can use systems, like softwares that are like, what, $15 subscription? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can find them. Or so, you can go to the tax assessor's office and find properties that are, you know, distressed. Find the owner from the tax assessor's office. Free information.
So if someone only has $10,000, you recommend they invest in themselves by getting the knowledge they need. Mm-hmm. Possibly start in wholesaling. Well, yeah. There's other things, but mainly wholesaling to grow up their liquidity.
Yeah.
And then what would they do? Number three, what would be step three?
So step three is...
Now they've got 30, 40,000.
Yeah. Okay. So my goal, that what I always say is five things, right? In real estate that you need to master, right? Source of funding. So who's going to fund the deal? Mm-hmm. You want a relationship with the local bank, the lender, hard money lender, your uncle that could lend you. Mm-hmm. You always have to have the source of funding. Then number two, you have to have a source of deals, like where you're going to find the deals. You want wholesalers. You don't want to be the one to go look for deals. Now, at the beginning, you should, you can, but then that's important where you're going to get the deal as an investor. And then a third one is management, because you want to also, when you buy this property, so if the bank gives you the money to buy a property, somebody has to find you the deals. Right now, the bank has given you an approval letter. Yeah. Somebody have to find you deals. You find a deal, whether it's agents, whether it's wholesalers. And then when you get the deal, the property, you get the money, you buy the property, somebody has to fix it. Contractors, get a relationship with those, get those out of the way. And then property management, and then tenants, how to find that. So you need to have all these five, right?
Good process.
Yeah. You have to. When you get that, now all you need to do, when you get to the tenant level, all you need to go is go back to number one. Find another, go to the lender for another fund, to get another property and keep going. So you keep repeating that and you just keep going. So now that you have the 20,000, the 30,000, sometimes you don't even need all of that. But I don't want to tell people, oh, you only need 10,000. Because sometimes you can go actually find a deal that's 30,000, but it's worth 60, for example.
That's right.
But I don't want to tell people, oh, you only need 10 grand, because you might not. But your second deal, you might only need 10 grand. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
that's why I don't want people, oh no, 10 grand. But my mentees and I still find deals that we only have to put 10,000 down. Because the seller financing, the seller probably only needs 10,000. That's the headache right now. So they will hand over the property to you with a 10,000 down payment, no credit check, none of that, and you take over the property. Yeah, so.
So how many deals, I know that you said you did with the guy with the auction, how many deals have you done creatively compared to just traditional?
A lot.
Is it like a 50-50 with your portfolio?
60-40.
Oh, so more creative.
More creative. Because it scaled my portfolio with the seller financing. I mean, most of the seller financing are all paid off now because I just have the property paid off. And after I do renovation, I have equity in it. So I pull that and put it on another property.
You ever do credit lines or do you always just cash out?
I done credit lines before. Yeah. And sometimes the bank will tell me, well, you have all this equity in this property. You want to take this? And I do that. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. Okay. So in the future now, you're wanting to, you said you're doing single family, got into storage. What other commercial or other type of assets tickle your desire?
Laundromats.
Laundromats.
Yeah, but not in a way that you think. Not the laundromat itself. I want to own the laundromat property.
And then
they rent from me.
I like that.
Yeah,
that's
what I like.
Yeah, we like that.
That's what I like. Yeah. So I love storage, laundromat. Actually, when I was looking for storage, I was looking for both. So I said, whichever one come. I found one for $650 or something. Mm-hmm. It was bringing like $200,000 a year. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's great, right? So I wanted to own the laundry itself, but I also want, I don't want to rent. I want to own the property itself.
That's right.
The one I saw also has some stores, not just the laundromat. There was like four other stores that it comes with. So I wanted to own the whole building.
So you want to get in the shopping
center? Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's amazing. So can you tell everyone where they can find you online?
Yes. So remember how I said I created my whole page? It's called Building Wealth from Rentals. So on Instagram, Building Wealth from Rentals, on YouTube as well.
On YouTube as well?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Build Wealth with Rentals.
Building Wealth with Rentals. From Rentals.
Very good. And do you still have space to have some more mentees?
Right now, I'm complete for the next, well, the batch is complete. The next one started November 26th or 27th.
Okay.
Yeah.
So people should reach out to you, right?
Yes, reach out to me.
Yamu, thank you for being on this.
Of course.
I'm new to podcasts and I'm still getting into personal
branding. You're good at this.
And you've been doing a great job. Look, you have one thing I've noticed about just a very good energy.
thank you.
Very positive person. And honestly, your story is amazing.
I spared you the sad part so we don't cry because I have my makeup done. And
well, it's amazing. And honestly, of course, off camera, I'd love to hear your whole story. I'm very inspired by it. Yeah. I'd love to meet your husband. I want to see you.
Well, if they want to hear all my story and everything in detail, yes, let them come to the conference December 6th and 7th. Yeah, I'll be there.
There you go. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
We'll see you guys later.
See you.